that fish be? It is the most elusive fish.
And it went with it grew.
Oh, fishy, 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 fish.
A fish, a fish, a fish, a fishy, oh.
Oh, fishy, 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 fish.
That went with it did grew.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. We are missing our archivist and wishing her well. I'm Charlie Bennett in the studio with Emmy Decker and Fred Rasko. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our episode today is from returning guest producer Melanie Kowalski of Emory University Libraries, and it's called Here There Be Sea Dragons.
Say what?
And by here, I mean Atlanta. The Georgia Aquarium is hosting the third International Sea Dragon Husbandry Symposium, June 5th through 6th. That's next week. So we thought it would be the ideal time to find out about scholarly research at a public nonprofit institution.
Also, the ideal time to find out what a sea dragon is.
Yes.
And husbandry.
Oh, I know about that.
Luckily, our guest is Dr. Lisa Hoops of the Georgia Aquarium. Melanie and Fred will be talking to her to get the scoop.
If you, our listeners, want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is LITS385 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 385. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or favorite species of marine fish with that hashtag.
The fishy, fishy fish. Our songs today are about the sea, sharing a passion for research and the challenges of getting sea dragon adults to make little sea dragon babies.
Mm.
That's husbandry. But now, let's kick things off with a song requested by our interview guest today and heartily approved of in the studio this morning. This is Dragon Attack by Queen, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
So joining us today is Dr. Lisa Hoops, Director of Research, Conservation, and Nutrition at the Georgia Aquarium. Welcome, Dr. Hoops.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
We're so glad to have you here. So today we want to talk to a little bit about the research work happening at the Georgia Aquarium. We know that the aquarium is going to be hosting its third International Sea Dragon Husbandry Symposium in a couple of weeks. And we know that in your work, you deal with both sea dragon husbandry and nutrition science, and we want to know more. So to kick off the interview, could you tell us what a sea dragon is?
Absolutely. I bet you had no idea that dragons are real. We're talking about a marine fish that is related to seahorses and pipefish. So they have a very elongated snout that they use to hoover or slurp plankton and other small crustaceans out of the water column for feeding. But the really cool part about these guys and what makes them pretty unique is that they have all these crazy leafy appendages across their body. And they use those primarily for camouflage to blend into their environment in order to hide from predators. So I'd encourage your listeners to hop onto Google or some other search engine and Google sea dragons. They're pretty impressive and unique-looking fish.
Okay, we will do that, and we'll put an image up on the Lost in the Stacks social media and all that. But so thanks for describing what a sea dragon is. Me not being a scientist, I would also like to know what in the world husbandry is.
What is husbandry? That's easy. That's the care of animals in zoos and aquariums. So it is the science of caring for terrestrial and aquatic animals.
So you care for sea dragons and make sure that they are, as a nutritionist there, you make sure that they're well fed. And you mentioned that they kind of slurp up plankton. So yeah. I'm guessing you don't just like have a little fish food bottle of plankton that you sprinkle into their aquarium. How does that work?
Yeah, actually, you do.
Oh, wow.
So the care and feeding, particularly of sea dragons, can be challenging, primarily because we don't know a lot about their nutrient requirements. So that makes it challenging, but also because they primarily eat live food. They are visual predators. They need to see their prey in order to eat. So we have to provide live food of an appropriate size, and these are usually very tiny things like very tiny shrimp or other types of zooplankton into the exhibit with them, where they kind of move around and then slurp them up or suck them up like a vacuum cleaner. So that's how they feed.
So what's going to be the focus of the sea dragon husbandry symposium? Do scientists get together and share strategies for doing this kind of thing?
Absolutely. That's exactly what the conference is. It'll be aquarists and keepers and managers from various zoos and aquariums that maintain sea dragons coming together to talk about various ways to care for them, the best methods to care for them. And that may be what to feed them or how to feed them, what the exhibit design should look like in terms of other species or other vegetation in the exhibit, what the best water temperatures may be or the salinities to hold these animals. And a big focus of the symposium will be reproduction, how to get these guys to breed and to successfully transfer eggs. A kind of interesting thing about sea dragons, similar to seahorses, is that the males will actually carry and rear the eggs. And they do that on the base of their tail, the backside of their tail. So they don't have a pouch like a typical seahorse would. But it is the males that hang onto the eggs and carry them until they're hatched.
So Lisa, since this is the third annual symposium, can you give us a little bit of history about this event? How did it come to be? Has it always been at the Georgia Aquarium, or does it travel around?
Yeah, it has been, it started out as a fairly small group of people probably wanting to have a little bit of extra face time to focus on the challenges of this particular species. They are originally from south and western coast of Australia, so they're not native to the U.S. And they can be, because they require live foods, challenging to care for. So the first Sea Dragon Symposium was in 2008 at Dallas World Aquarium. The second one was in 2016 at Scripps Oceanographic Institute. And then we are hosting the third one this year, June 5 and 6. So it travels around and it has slowly gained attendees, but it is a fairly small group of people. It's a fairly small specialized group. We're expecting about 50 attendees to this year's conference. And that'll be from several different continents. So we have folks coming from Europe and Asia and Australia specifically to attend these meetings and share their expertise on sea dragons.
Are sea dragons a popular aquarium fish worldwide? Is that why there's like such a niche need for a conference of, you know, scientists that care for these or are doing research on these worldwide? Is it something that you find in a lot of aquariums like the Georgia Aquarium?
Well, we do have one of the species here at the Georgia Aquarium. We have the weedy sea dragon species. But yeah, they're are held at a few institutions. They're very charismatic looking fish, so I think they are always drawing the eye of the public and sparking curiosity amongst the public when they see them. And that has really led to this kind of specialty group of folks that are very dedicated to sea dragons and to learning more about them and to care for them.
And so you're currently the Director of Research, Conservation, and Nutrition at the Georgia Aquarium, but we were curious about how you got into the field of nutrition for animals. So can you give us a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. I kind of fell into it sideways. When I finished my PhD in the field of energetics, which is looking at how animals use energy to do various things, search for food, stay warm, maintain their metabolism. I was trying to figure out what to do next, and a very interesting opportunity arose through the University of Florida, looking at nutrition in conjunction with Disney's Animal Kingdom. And nutrition is sort of on the front end of energetics. So your energetics is either a result of good or poor nutrition. And so I thought that would be a really interesting piece to complement some of the research that I had been doing. So I went off and I lived at Disney, Disney's Animal Kingdom, for 2 years, studying some of their collection animals and learning clinical nutrition from their nutritionist. And when I finished that position, coincidentally, the position at Georgia Aquarium was open. So it seemed like a natural fit. And I packed up and moved to Georgia, and I haven't left. So that's kind of how I got into the field of nutrition. And since then, have really realized the lack of information on a lot of the species that zoos and aquariums house. And so I've been kind of focusing my field research and my clinical research on trying to help understand feeding and feeding requirements for many of these species.
Pretty interesting that there's so much information about the animals that is unknown.
It is, and it makes makes studying them a wide open field, it's very satisfying because you're discovering something new all the time, because there's not a lot of work that's been done previously on many of these things, many of these species. So it's a really cool part of what I get to do here.
We'll be back with more from Dr. Lisa Hoops of the Georgia Aquarium after a music set.
File this set under QL638.S9A33.
True Affection by The Blow, and before that, Ocean of Confusion by The Screaming Trees. Songs about the challenges and rewards of love, because sea dragon reproduction is hard.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and we continue our conversation with Dr. Lisa Hoops, Director of Research, Conservation, and Nutrition at the Georgia Aquarium.
So Lisa, can you tell us a little bit more, as the nutritionist in-house, about your work with sea dragons? What's your kind of primary research?
Absolutely. My interest in sea dragons and sea dragon nutrition is trying to understand more about the nutritional requirements for this species. We know a lot about nutritional requirements for domestic things like cats and dogs, and even some exotic zoo things like zebras and elephants. But when it comes to nutrition on aquatic animals, and specifically some of these exotic fishes, we don't have a lot of great information. There's not a lot of information that's known. For instance, how much vitamin A does a sea dragon need? I don't know. There's no book that I can go to look up that information. So in order to get at that, we have to spend a little bit of time studying the types of foods that we feed in zoos and aquariums, and then what they might be eating in the wild, and comparing that and looking for differences, and then spending a little bit of time trying to formulate diets appropriately. So my work here at the aquarium is spending a lot of time looking at the different types of foods that we offer to sea dragons. We do feed some frozen products, and we do feed some live foods to them. A lot of the live foods that we feed don't have a lot of nutritional value, so we have to supplement them with different types of fats and proteins to get them to be what we think is needed for the sea dragon. And then I do have some partners at various other institutions, at Birch Aquarium in California and some folks at Melbourne Aquarium in Australia, that are collecting some native prey items that allows us to look at what they would be eating in the wild, and then how do we formulate our diets to match that. I'm also interested in looking at the role of nutrition as it relates to reproduction. We know that there is a great link in fish between nutritional quality and then the quality of the egg and the resulting brood stock. And so one of the species in aquariums, the leafy sea dragon, has never reproduced in zoos or aquariums, not successfully. And so I'm wanting to see if there is a nutritional component to that, and if we can improve the diets for these guys, then we may see some better reproductive success with the species.
One thing that you just mentioned that kind of struck me when you were using the example of earlier of vitamin A in a sea dragon diet, and there's no book that you can go to look that up, is one of your goals, or I guess one of your profession's goals, is to kind of codify that in a text that that you could bring that together so that, you know, future researchers can have that kind of information. Are you building something like that, like either the guide to the sea dragon or maybe seahorses and pipefish in general?
Absolutely. So that is part of the goal of this research, is to be able to provide feeding guidelines and feeding standards for other institutions that are housing these same species. So the end result will be something like a husbandry manual or feeding guidelines for leafy and weedy sea dragons. So that is the goal, to share this information with our colleagues. And that's part of what the conference will do, is we're beginning to present some preliminary data, share it with our colleagues, and then produce a document at the end that allows them to have some guidelines and the best way to prepare and secure some of these different types of foods.
So when it comes to the research that you and your colleagues are producing, you get together at conferences and symposiums like the one that's coming up at the Georgia Aquarium. Do you also publish professionally? How do you and your colleagues share data both amongst one another and then with the public?
Yep, through various mediums. We do it through traditional academic publications, through journals. We certainly share our findings at conferences, and that's a little bit more of a preliminary means of sharing data that may not be polished and completely ready to be published, but that's a great avenue for sharing findings. Here at the aquarium, we also have various social media channels that we are constantly pumping out new findings or research that we're doing on various species here as well. So various types of avenues, from purely academic to digestible by the lay public.
So I know that we've talked about your research, and I kind of want to transition the conversation a little bit, because I know that a lot of our listeners are really familiar with the public exhibition work that the aquarium does, but I don't know how many of them are familiar with the research side of the Georgia Aquarium. So the aquarium is a nonprofit organization that serves as a leader in aquatic research and animal care. I'm wondering if you can tell the listeners a little bit about the research side of the Georgia Aquarium. How many researchers are in-house, and what kind of work is being done in addition to the research around sea dragon husbandry?
Sure, absolutely. Our research department is small but mighty. We have 5 research staff plus an administrative assistant, and we are doing all sorts of great work in the field within this department. We have a very large whale shark program where we are studying the movement patterns and the habitat distribution of whale sharks across the globe. We're also looking at health assessments on these animals, pulling blood samples and looking at some baseline values in their blood to help assess the health in these locations. We also have a big plastics initiative looking at the impact of plastics on ocean health, specifically in these areas where these whale sharks are congregating and hanging out, since they are filter feeders, and that could be impacting their health. We have a very large manta research program as well, a manta ray, off the coast of Florida, where we're also looking at movement patterns and diet of these species. We've done a lot of work with a variety of species here, looking at health assessments in sand tiger sharks, in southern stingrays in the Cayman Islands. I have a large spotted eagle ray research program in partnership with colleagues at Moat Aquarium, looking at feeding ecology and diet in spotted eagle rays. We also have a very large dolphin health assessment program here, where we're looking at the health of dolphins as ocean sentinels. And I would be remiss without mentioning a project that we just completed with Emory, looking at characterizing the complete genome of the whale shark, which has been one of the first. So we are really proud of that work with our colleagues at Emory.
So fun aside, I am in love with the whale sharks at the Georgia Aquarium. And as an Emory employee, I'm so proud to know about this genome research. I'm going to be doing some Googling after the interview.
That paper has been published, and it's kind of the first of its kind. So it's a really unique project that we're excited to have partnered with Emory on it as well.
Our guest today is Dr. Lisa Hoops of the Georgia Aquarium, and we'll talk more with her on the left side of the hour.
Hey, this is Damien from OK Go. And you are listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta.
Today's show is called Here There Be Sea Dragons. I almost put a matey on that one. And here at Lost in the Stacks, we've been thinking about how the mission and purpose of a public aquarium compares to that of a library. Well, a doctoral dissertation by University of Kent student Andrew Moss included this passage. Zoos and aquariums are some of the most visited institutions, with around 700 million visits made to them globally each year. They are, in a basic sense, simply repositories of living biodiversity. However, the justifications for the continued existence of zoos have evolved since their inception in the late 18th and early 19th centuries, and nearly all now position themselves as organizations focused on the conservation of the world's remaining biodiversity. Public education of visitors is seen as, and is claimed to be, a central role in achieving this mission. So that was Andrew Moss. For our listeners out there in the library profession, that constant struggle to justify our continued existence, that desire to educate and to demonstrate that we're more than a repository of content, does that sound a little familiar? A little familiar? File this set under SF457.1.H86.
You just heard The Ocean Breathes Salty by Modest Mouse. And before that, The Sea of Love by Cat Power. Songs about sharing what you're passionate about.
We're back with Dr. Lisa Hoops of the Georgia Aquarium. And in this segment, we began by asking her if her work focused more on lab research or doing work in the field or ocean, as it were.
I'm really fortunate that I get to do a little bit of both. So we have a lot of projects happening in-house, studying things that are very applicable to our collection animals. But we also get to go out into the field and explore some of these other research projects that, again, still relate to our collection animals, and it's the collection that drives a lot of the research that we focus on. But it's some of the more exotic and exciting aspects of my job here, is getting to travel far afield to some of these exotic locations and gather information on these animals that will not only help conserve their populations in the wild, but also provide some information on animals that can, on our animals in our collection. So if we're collecting health information on wild animals, how does that compare to our collection animals, and can it help us improve how we're caring for them?
So, Dr. Hoops, when you're doing this research, you know, you've got your PhD, and you obviously spent a lot of time in the academic environment, and now you're in a nonprofit environment. So do you have a sense of the differences between doing research for a nonprofit, kind of a public institution like the Georgia Aquarium, versus doing research at an academic public institution like a university?
Yeah, I think the big difference is that you know, when you're in an academic institution, your research interests can really be driven by what your personal interest or your personal field of study is. But here at the aquarium, our research is really tailored and driven by the collection, the type of animals that we have here. And fortunately, we have an amazing collection, which allows us to access some spectacular animals in the wild. But that research is really tailored toward our collection and toward storytelling for our guests. So a lot of the research that we do then gets translated into information that is presented to the guests on the public side. So we want to be able to be telling conservation stories or stories of ocean health or concerns that we have about the ocean through a lot of the research that we do, and link it through our collection. That's one of the big differences. Another difference is that we are much more nimble than an academic institution. We can move faster on research opportunities, and that allows us to be able to think outside the box and craft these grand expeditions to these faraway locations to access some of these questions that we might have within our collection.
So you mentioned translating your research into the public exhibitions. How involved is the research staff in terms of coming up with the curatorial content for the exhibitions that the public gets to see?
Yeah, we try and be as involved as we can be, because that's an important message that we want the public to be knowing about some of the research that we're doing and some of our findings from within this research. So as we begin to design new exhibitry, we work closely with our content management staff here to talk about messaging and things that we think the public would be interested in or that they should be knowing about some of the species that we are housing in our collection.
So, Dr. Hoops, in the time that we have left, you know, we call Lost in the Stacks the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show, and your work obviously entails a lot of research and, as you say, looking for information. Is there a library that you can take advantage of at the Georgia Aquarium or some kind of information center?
Yes, we actually have had a continuous operating library on the premises since we opened in 2005. It is staffed by a volunteer librarian named Marie, who is awesome. And she will, if we don't have the information on site in the library, she will actually track it down for us. It is accessible both to our staff and our volunteer contingent here. And in addition to having, you know, reference material, it also serves as an archive of the aquarium's history. So it includes things like architectural plans for the building, scissors used for ribbon cutting, those sorts of things. So it's become a valuable resource to us here within the building and continues to grow every year. So, yeah, it's great.
So that information is going to be really exciting to the librarians and archivists that listen to this show. I think that we might even have to have just like a follow-up show where we like find out more about what's in the library.
Yes. Yeah. We have a lot of books. We do have some academic journals, but if there's something that we need, our volunteer librarian will track it down for us.
A lot of times, 100% of the time anymore, the latest scientific research is going to be electronic only. And so our librarians listening might be interested to know, is there a lot of electronic subscriptions and collections that you have access to?
Yeah, we, as an institution, we do not maintain very many online subscriptions because they're costly. However, within the research department, we do have a number of academic affiliations through various institutions, and we have access to their very large subscription libraries as well. So between our on-site library and our internal sort of academic affiliations, we generally can track down what we're looking for.
And what is your favorite part of the work that you get to do at the aquarium?
I think it's working with a very unique collection and constantly discovering new avenues for improving animal care, particularly for our various collection species, and then getting to validate that or complement that with field research. I really am lucky in where I landed. It is a dream job for sure.
Well, that brings us to the end of our list of questions, but it has been so wonderful talking to you about the work that you do at the aquarium and about the upcoming symposium. I know that Fred and I are now much more educated about sea dragons, and we're really excited to share that with our listening audience. So thank you so much.
I'm tempted to attend the symposium just to see what sea dragon research is all about.
You are more than welcome to come on by, or if you guys want to just come on by and take a look at some sea dragons, let me know and I'm happy to show you our fantastic collection.
We're in.
We're there.
You have a connection.
Yeah. Dr. Hoops, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show, and I can't wait to see how it turns out, especially with the music.
File this set under QL78.5.G46.
What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor early in the morning?
Chasing the tortoise shell.
Seven Seas by Echo and His Precious Bunny Men. And before that, What Shall We Do with a Drunken Sailor by the Robert Shaw Chorale. Those are songs expressing enthusiasm for the life of the sea.
Our show today was called Here There Be Sea Dragons, where we found out a little about the behind-the-scenes research that goes on at places like the Georgia Aquarium.
And we found out that the Georgia Aquarium has a library.
We have to visit this library and meet this volunteer aquarium librarian.
That sounds like a future part two episode. What do you think?
Well, how could we not do a show on the volunteer aquarium librarian? That would be like going to the aquarium and not seeing the otters. It would be a huge mistake. Okay. Time for the credits. Hey, Josh, roll the fish.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Amit Doshi, Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagenmeyer, Fred Rasko, and Emmy Decker.
Josh was our engineer today, and the show was guest produced by our good friend Melanie Kowalski of Emory University Libraries.
Legal counsel and leafy appendages to use as camouflage were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Dr. Hoops for being on the show. Thanks to the 3rd International Sea Dragon Husbandry Symposium for coming to Atlanta June 5th and 6th. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and plenty of other places we don't even know about.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we're going to find out what the phrase washed up emo really means.
Time for our last song today, and we close with another request from Dr. Hoops that fits right in with our oceanic themes of the day.
And with my taste.
If you want to kick off a scientific conference, kick it off right by getting the lead out. This is The Ocean by Led Zeppelin, right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everyone.
And crank it.